This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
What the heck happened to those warmer winters we were promised with global warming? Don't ask New Englanders why they're still digging out, or Siberians and Europeans whether this winter will ever end. We've reached one of the few climatologists who predicted this weird bend in climate change. Dr. Judah Cohen is the Director of Seasonal Forecasting at AER, and that stands for the private meteorological company Atmospheric and Environmental Research. Cohen is also a research affiliate at the Parsons Lab at MIT and author of many scientific papers. His latest paper, co-authored with Carl Pfeiffer and Jennifer Francis, was just published March 13th in Nature Communications. The title is Warm Arctic Episodes Linked with Increased Frequency of Extreme Weather in the United States. Judah Cohen, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I don't know whether I called you up to find out why it's so miserable this winter or just to complain.
I tell all my friends, please don't shoot the messenger. Getting a lie, I'm not the favorite person. Not everybody's favorite person these days. So,
well, no, you're telling us the opposite of what we wanted. We're all looking forward to being toasty warm here in the north.
Yeah, no. People want to hear a certain message, and they don't get that message they want to hear. They're not happy. But that's what I'm finding out this winter.
So what's the weather been like where you are lately?
Yeah, we've had this, calling this parade of nor'easters. I've had three so far. You know, all of them were strong. I mean, you know, I guess to get repetitive storms is not that unusual, but to get three storms in quick succession of the magnitude that we have seen, I think that's pretty rare. And, you know, now it looks like we're looking at a fourth, you know, later in the week. So I think that's pretty unusual weather.
When you and I talked in January 2017, a year ago almost, TV news was running graphics of the Arctic vortex, and we discussed what that means for climatologists versus the weather forecasters. But it looked like a big bulge of cold falling down into the U.S. But this year, it seems like the Arctic was split into two, that cold, with some hitting the west and another blast hitting the U.K. and northern Europe. So was it different this year?
Yeah, it was different this year than last year. You know, last year we had these polar vortex disruptions, and, you know, following these polar vortex disruptions, you get this, you know, increased probability of severe winter weather. There was, like, some minor polar vortex disruptions in February, and that actually brought a lot of snowfall to New England. And then we had that very cold March, and before that was very mild. You know, this year we've had two of these polar vortex disruptions. We had a minor one in December, and that was followed by the historic cold in the northeastern U.S. and that bomb cyclone. And then we had a much more major polar vortex disruption in February, and the impact from that one was more widespread across the northern hemisphere than any, you know, that we've seen earlier in the winter or anything compared to last winter. When initially the polar vortex became, you know, weakened or disrupted, the initial response, the atmospheric response, was for this cold that kind of built up in, well, the cold had been building up in Siberia over some time. In January, it was very cold in Siberia, but when we had that polar vortex disruption in February, that's got, like, the, you know, that opened up the gates, and all that cold air from Siberia spilled out across Europe and reached the United Kingdom, and there was, you know, record cold and these disruptive snowfalls, and, you know, we have Rome and Madrid and Ireland, you know, had all this, again, this, for them, unusual snowfall. Actually, here in North America, the initial response to that polar vortex disruption was cold, actually, in the western U.S., which I think is somewhat unusual, but, you know, I think the polar vortex disruption wasn't typical. But it was cold and then snow. I mean, and in a lot of ways, that polar vortex disruption, you know, maybe saved the west from a more dire winter, you know, a very dry and really lack of snow. So, they, you know, since that polar vortex disruption, you know, things have definitely improved. As the impacts from that polar vortex disruption continued or kind of maybe progressed, that kind of stormy and cold weather, you know, transitioned from the western U.S. to the eastern U.S. And now here in the northeast, you know, we've turned much colder. I mean, I know in Boston anyway, I mean, March is going to be a colder month than February. That's a pretty rare event. Happened last year as well, so a rare event 2 years in a row. But, and of course, we've had kind of this snow blitz here in the northeast. I mean, I actually went skiing last week Vermont and Mount Snow. And that was, had to have been the best snow conditions I could ever remember in the Northeast. I mean, it was so much powder, you know, no ice. I mean, very rare. It really felt like it was skiing in the West. So it's been, you know, a wild ride, I would say, this winter with, you know, these large swings and this extreme weather that we've seen.
Even the TV weathermen, Judah, are starting to say the words sudden stratospheric warming. It sounds scary, but most of us don't have a clue what that means or why it matters. Can you help us with that?
I'll start a little scientifically. Maybe I'll transition to some maybe analogies that might make it easier to at least get some kind of comprehension. So in the stratosphere, you have, that's where the polar vortex resides, and it's an area of low pressure. And in the northern hemisphere, the winds circulate around low pressure counterclockwise. So you have a low pressure sitting right over the North Pole. The winds blow from west to east across the entire northern hemisphere. And when this polar vortex is quiet or strong, and those winds blow very quickly, you know, it's a fast-flowing ribbon or stream of air, it acts as a kind of a delineation or, you know, kind of as a barrier where it separates cold air to the north and warm air to the south. And that warm air, if that warm air tries to invade the Arctic region, it's kind of deflected off the wind that blows around the polar vortex. I mean, I was speaking with a friend to try and explain it, and I kind of used an analogy. You could think of it like a bowl, right? So cold temperatures in the atmosphere column it's thinner. The atmospheric column is thinner. And that's why we say like low pressure, because cold air is denser. And where it's warmer, it's thicker because the air is lighter. It expands more. And if it kind of, across the northern hemisphere, kind of forms the shape of like a bowl. And the cold air kind of sinks into the center of the bowl, right? If you have any cold air, kind of, right, and sinks into that polar vortex in a way. So the cold air really resides right over the pole. And when you get these sudden stratospheric warmings, the air warms rapidly inside in the polar vortex and in around the Arctic, and it's like you flip the bowl over, right? So instead of it being low in the middle of the bowl, right, now it's bulging upwards in the center, right? So all that cold air that is collected, you know, in that center of the bowl now has to roll, you know, air always flows, you know, down the gradient. So that cold air that was over the Arctic now kind of rolls down into the lower latitudes. And that's what we call a sudden stratospheric warming, or I like to refer to as a polar vortex disruption.
You made it. I understood it.
You understood it, yeah. So just, yeah, think of it as a, you know, normally have a bowl, and just so you reverse the bowl, and what was originally going into the center of the bowl is now flowing out to the, you know, edges of the bowl.
So who established that the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the global average, and when?
Well, this was just observing it. I mean, it started in the 1990s. Up until the 1990s, you know, there's been some oscillations in the temperatures, but in general, they have been warming, and the Arctic and the rest of the globe were kind of warming at the same rate. But if you plot the temperatures since 1990, both the Arctic separately and, let's say, the mid-latitudes or the rest of the northern hemisphere, you can see that there's kind of this divergence with the two temperature trends are separating from each other, and the Arctic is warming much faster. I mean, I like to use the year 1990. Some other people maybe start that Arctic warming or accelerate Arctic warming later in that decade, maybe like around 1998. But, you know, so the 1990s or so, that's when we really observe, you know, we witness this accelerated Arctic warming where it's warming twice the rate of the rest of the hemisphere.
Now, here on the ground, we in the public rely mainly on cold or warm. We count on the temperatures, but your analysis in your new paper relies more on pressure, and I guess that's something that meteorologists depend on more. Why is there that separation? What are the relationships there?
Yeah, I mean, I like to look at pressure. Again, there's a little bit of a technical term, but it's a geopotential high, which includes both the surface pressure and the temperature of the atmospheric column. I think it's more of an inclusive index, so it has kind of this dynamic component to it, which is, you know, related to the pressure, you know, and it's like what you would associate on a weather map with high pressure and low pressure. And then there's this other component, the temperature. I mean, the debate in the science is saying that, well, but the fact that the Arctic is warming, that could be possibly influencing our weather in the mid-latitudes. Obviously, I'm a big proponent of that idea, something I've been pushing for quite a while. So we use both indices or metrics, both the geopotential high, which maybe call it pressure, people understand that better, and then temperature. But we found this, basically the same relationship when, again, for our study, higher pressure is the equivalent or nearly the equivalent of warmer temperatures. And just for the reason that I said, because warmer temperatures are more expansive, so the atmosphere column is thicker, and cold temperatures are thinner. It's more dense. So we found this relationship that when pressure is high across the Arctic, or, you know, again, that would be the equivalent of warm temperatures across the Arctic, then we see an increase in severe winter weather, you know, here in the northeastern U.S., the eastern U.S. in general. That relationship did fall apart as you got into the western U.S. It was either mixed, or some cities it was the exact opposite, so that a cold Arctic or low pressure in the Arctic was related to more severe winter weather, and a warm Arctic to less severe winter weather. So, I mean, and there have been other studies that have said that this, we've seen kind of this dipole pattern where it's been kind of mild and dry in the western U.S. and cold and stormy in the eastern U.S., you know, something that's happening more and more frequently than it used to. And I think in our study it's consistent with what other people have been reporting.
Now, as we speak, Judah Cohen, the Arctic sea ice maximum for the winter is being set, and this year's winter maximum, if it isn't the lowest ever, it's close. Is that a factor in the storminess we've seen further south?
I mean, I would say yes. I mean, our study says that factors that are contributing to a warm Arctic favor more severe winter weather, and that is, and we showed in this article, maybe something that was, you know, a little bit different. Most previous studies have been really focused on temperature. Here we also included snowfall, and when a warmer Arctic is more favorable for heavier snowfalls in the eastern U.S. So and we also, this relationship with the polar vortex and the sun stratospheric warming, that you get this increase in severe winter weather for multiple weeks following what we were talking about earlier, sun stratospheric warmings or a weakened polar vortex. So, you know, we had this big polar vortex disruption in February. So I think, you know, clearly the pattern we've had since the end of February, you know, after that initial kind of, it was July and February weather that we had, but I mean, it settled into this very stormy, unusually stormy pattern. I think it's clearly related to the sun stratospheric warming and a warmer Arctic in general. And if you remember, also there were some stories in the media about, you know, like north of Greenland being, you know, well above freezing, and it was really unusual and, you know, I don't know, 50 degrees above normal type story. So I mean, I think it's all related. I think it's all part of, you know, two sides of one coin, or, you know, it's all part of the same phenomenon. That was a kind of our argument in this most recent paper.
So I'm going to make a statement here, and then I'm going to ask you if I'm right or wrong about it. But is it fair to say that it's possible our winters may get generally warmer along with global warming, but that during certain periods, say from mid-January, mid-February, or even into March, we can expect in some parts of the continents snowier and colder storms to hit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's very consistent with what we showed. You know, we looked at the trend in severe winter weather, you know, our daily trend, starting from, you know, December through the end of February. We didn't really look at March, though we had snowfall was included in the analysis. And for the first part of the winter, there isn't much of a trend in severe winter weather in the eastern U.S., but there's a positive trend starting in the mid to late part of the winter. So, I think it's exactly right. I think there's these offsetting or canceling type of forces that are going on. You have this just general warming of the whole globe, and that's leading to milder winter weather. I mean, I don't see any other way around it. But I do think there's this kind of, and that's like a thermodynamic, response to climate change. I think something that's been surprising and really not something that we anticipated or expected is that there's this dynamic response to climate change, in particular Arctic change, where this Arctic is, you know, is warming more rapidly than the rest of the globe. And that dynamic response actually can lead to these episodes of more severe winter weather. But typically this polar vortex interaction, you know, doesn't happen until January or February. That's when, you know, it doesn't really happen in the first part of the winter. So, you know, so I think what you describe is exactly consistent with our ideas.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Dr. Judah Cohen, a research climatologist from Atmospheric and Environmental Research. We're talking about why winter nastiness can strike the northeastern United States and many parts of northern Asia, even as the Arctic is warming rapidly and as the whole world is slowly warming. Now, Supposing I run a major trucking operation of some kind, or could even be military, and I'm going to move a lot of things in January, but I could do it in February. But I don't want my trucks fouled up in deep snowstorms. Based on your science, can I check with your company to see what the Arctic suggests will be happening 2 weeks from now?
Yes, absolutely. And we do have an operational seasonal forecast, and we do consult with clients and those type of issues. And I also have a weekly blog that talks about, mostly focuses on the Arctic and how the Arctic is impacting the weather across the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, I saw there was kind of this vacuum. Climate scientists or seasonal forecasters were really, their efforts were focused on the tropics using things like El Nino Southern Oscillation. In shorthand, an acronym is ENSO. Maybe your audience is familiar with something that's been used more recently is the Majorian Oscillation or the MJO. That is not, as well known as ENSO. But these are tropical phenomena that have to do with activity in the tropics, weather. ENSO is sea surface temperatures. Majorian Oscillation is convection in the tropics. And so I felt like, that was kind of, there was this monopoly, on the tropics. And I've been, trying to put forth these ideas that the Arctic, maybe at one point wasn't that important in influencing our weather, it's only gotten to the point where it is important, with these really dramatic changes that are going on in the Arctic. So this blog it really focuses on using Arctic variability to try to explain and understand what's happening now, but also, trying to predict what will happen in the coming weeks, even months. So, certainly your audience can check that blog. It's called the Arctic Oscillation / Polar Vortex blog. Polar Vortex should be, seems like an appropriate name given everything we've discussed. But it should be fairly easy to find if you just Google search Judah Cohen and AO blog or something like that. But just a Judah Cohen Google search or the blog will come up like one or the first or second.
Okay, and I'll put a link in my show blog at ecoshock.org as well.
Much appreciated, yeah. So it's easy enough to find.
All right, now, do your observations of a warmer Arctic, colder continents agree with predictions made by most of the climate models? And if not, what does that tell us?
No, they don't. They don't. The models, a criticism, I'd say the most common criticism of my ideas is that the models really don't show it. But I think the models are flawed. I think this winter was a great example of it. The models never really showed any kind of cold weather the whole winter. Not just the United States, but also for Europe and Siberia. Even the model, the model forecast made in January for the month of February showed uniformly warm across all of Eurasia, maybe not as warm across North America, but I'm sure they forecasted warm in North America, which actually, Eastern North America just may not have been a bad forecast. But certainly it was not the accurate forecast for Northern Asia and Europe, which turned out to have a pretty cold month of February, and which continued into March. I think they just don't simulate or, they don't reproduce the interactions that take place at high latitudes, and they have, and I've documented in papers, along with other colleagues, the flaws or the shortcomings of the models, especially when it comes to handling of the polar vortex, which I think is obviously critical to my ideas and this kind of bridge between a warming Arctic and cold continents idea. So
your new paper reiterates what both you and Jennifer Francis have said in the past. You have observations of a relationship, but no proof yet of a mechanism or a cause. Is there any hope for that mechanism becoming known? And what about the idea of teleconnection?
Yeah, so I think the paper does break some new ground, but that idea, the general idea is not necessarily new. Most of the research on this topic is actually focused on Eurasia. Our paper focused on eastern United States, so that was also somewhat new. And we, both Jennifer and I have kind of put out maybe competing ideas, different mechanisms, how this works. Hers is more through the jet stream. Mine has been through the polar vortex. So we have a mechanism, though it's hard to prove it with just an observational analysis. People, I think more climate scientists would be persuaded if we could show the mechanism very cleanly in these modeling experiments, which until now has kind of been fleeting or, is really not, we've not been able to demonstrate. But I think if we kind of, if we approach the models with the assumption that they're flawed and they need to be fixed, I think the models can be modified and improved so that they do demonstrate or support this mechanism. But I do think that the models need, you know, they need modifications. I think the models as they are just, you know, simply flawed. I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, I'm someone, obviously, maybe critic might say, well, there's nothing wrong with the models. It's your idea that needs, you know, improving and fixing. But I would point out the models really fell short pretty dramatically, you know, with their forecast this winter. And, you know, if the models were anywhere near, you know, even not perfect, but close to being perfect, or certainly don't need big modifications, then they should have done a better job than they did with their forecasts.
And this all puts us in a really tough position, because we have to explain to simplistic climate deniers that, yes, these awful winter storms may very well be signs of climate change.
Yeah, I've actually been accused in the past of being a climate change denier. You know, maybe, both sides, climate change denier, climate change apologist, both sides have been accused of being on both sides at the same time. But, I mean, I think that, you know, it's better, I mean, because it increases skepticism when you're saying it's going to be warmer, it's going to be warmer, winters are going to disappear, and then all of a sudden people have, like, you know, have this, you know, shock of cold to weather and big snowstorms. And, you know, if it's one thing that happened once, I mean, people say, well, it's just a random event, you know, and it's cold and it's snowy, it's just a random event. But it keeps repeating itself. And I mean, how many times does it have to repeat itself when you finally say, you know, it's no longer random? And I think if you have an explanation, I mean, I think that helps. I think that really helps with trying to make the general public understand climate change. And you know, again, I think the best really support of a hypothesis is being able to use it to make a better prediction. I certainly think that, you know, I have been able to demonstrate improved predictability compared to the models and using other ideas, you know, in climate science. So, you know, what you said is maybe you're preaching to the choir there, but I mean, I think it would really help explain and help the general public understand climate change. And just because we didn't anticipate it initially doesn't make the idea wrong. I mean, I think we need to be open to that there are surprises. I mean, this is not, you know, it's not a perfect science, and our understanding is certainly not complete or perfect, and there are things that are going to happen that we just didn't anticipate or expect ahead of time.
But do you think it's possible that there could still be years when we have a relatively colder Arctic and so a better winter for people in the American northern and eastern states? I mean, these things go back and forth, or is it just a progression and this is our new state?
Yes, I mean, you certainly can have a pretty mild winter even with a warm Arctic. I mean, it's not always. I mean, the past two winters weren't too bad. I mean, you know, there were episodes, but I mean, overall, they were pretty mild, at least here in the, you know, this, I'm thinking about North America as a whole. But, you know, I think getting to a cold Arctic, I mean, I think the Arctic could turn cold for short periods. I mean, but it seems to be getting really hard to get a cold Arctic for an entire winter. I mean, just there's so much less sea ice. Not only is it, you know, is the extent of the sea ice much less, right? So it covers a much smaller area. But the thickness, the volume of that ice, I think is at least or more, you know, more dramatic than even the extent of the ice. So even if there is a thin, you know, veneer of ice in the, over the Arctic Ocean, there's still heat that can come out of the Arctic because the ice is so thin. Plus, I mean, the whole system is warmer, and, you know, the air masses and the ocean, you know, the ocean waters, they're mixing all the time. And so, you know, there's constantly more and more heat being transported into the Arctic. And it seems like once it gets there, it's hard for it to get out. I don't remember the last time we had a cold, you know, cold Arctic winter. I think, you know, that might be a, never say never. I'm not, you know, so certainly I could see the Arctic having a cold winter. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's going to become a very, much more rare thing, and much harder, I think, to happen.
So you've suggested in the new paper that we might get this increased storminess, especially in January or February, the colder continent effect, if you want to call it that, during a transition period of Arctic warming. So our question is, if this is the new reality, how long is that transition period?
Yeah, so it's hard to know. I mean, I do think that, you know, the warming now is kind of regionalized. I mean, at least there's kind of these bullseyes where the warming is focused. It's not kind of uniform or spread evenly throughout the Arctic. And I think it's the fact that it's, you know, it's in these certain regions that makes it favorable for weakening the polar vortex. If it became kind of uniform, let's say all the sea ice disappeared and the warming just became uniform throughout the Arctic, then, I mean, this every, you know, kind of this mechanism that I, at least that I've kind of discussed, I think it might go away. And then we would just be left with, you know, just really mild winters. I mean, there's always, you know, the oddball chance of getting, you know, a cold winter. But overall, it would be very hard to overcome just the, you know, the overwhelming warming that's occurring. So it's hard to know. But I do think this mechanism that at least that I have argued for might be dependent on at least, you know, some sea ice, you know, existing. I mean, there'll always be sea ice, certainly in the winter, but if it's just a very thin seasonal sea ice and the warming is just, you know, kind of spread evenly throughout the Arctic, I think my mechanism that I've been arguing really could disappear.
I may not live long enough to see that, though.
Well, there's some forecast, you know, the Arctic will be ice-free, you know, in like, you know, 10 years or so. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, but it's hard. All these things are hard. There's, you know, there's natural variability in the system. You know, it oscillates naturally regardless, you know, of these outside forcing, and you know, say the forcing, you know, from human-induced climate change. But, you know, it's a complicated system, and there are a lot of, you know, moving wheels, moving parts. And it's hard to anticipate all of them, you know, ahead of time. And I think that's, you know, certainly a lesson that I've taken what's happened. You know, again, I mean, when I was in grad school or, you know, or starting out, everybody said, you know, winter is over. It's going to be hard to get, you know, this, you know, really deep cold is kind of record cold and heavy snowfall. Oh, that's going to soon disappear. And that I would argue it hasn't been the case. That surprised me, and I think it surprised a lot of people.
Absolutely. You know, in 2002 or 3, I got a recording from Environment Canada saying that winters would be warmer and nights would be warmer, and that's what to expect with climate change. 2006, I did a show, Will There Still Be Winter Sports? And I talked to people in Aspen who said, we don't know. Maybe there won't be enough snow, but you just went skiing and it was great.
Yeah, no, best ever. I mean, you know, it's definitely, again, winter has hanged in there, you know, much more strongly than certainly the field anticipated. There's a very marked warming trend, you know, throughout the year and throughout the three seasons, spring, summer, and fall. Winter was supposed to warm the fastest of all the four seasons, but it's actually turned out the opposite. And I'm talking about across the continents, you know, the U.S., Europe, Asia. But it's warmed the least, you know, and that's been surprising. And yeah, so, you know, expect the unexpected, I think.
Three-season warming and one-season cooling, and that's possibly because of changes in the Arctic. We're going to have to leave it there. From Lexington, Massachusetts, we've been speaking with Dr. Judah Cohen. He works with the Parsons Lab at MIT and for the forecasting company Atmospheric and Environmental Research. Judah is the lead author of a new study just published in Nature Communications, Warm Arctic Episodes, linked with increased frequency of extreme winter weather in the United States. Judah, thank you for joining us again on Radio EcoShock. I hope to talk again, well, next year.
All right, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.